Howdy, Frog fans, and welcome in to the Gridiron Frogs podcast. It's a part of the TCU Horned Frogs on SI page. I'm your host, Just Nolan, because you can't handle the Ruth, a Fort Worth area native with very interesting and peculiar ties to TCU. I'm joined by my partner in crime, JD Andrus, who seems to co-host every podcast for our site and is the week one leader of our score predictions, as he was the closest one to predicting the TCU-Stanford score. I know he is feeling pretty good about that. He was talking some smack in our group chat earlier today. This is episode 9 of our show covering TCU football and a smattering of other topics related. It is Wednesday, the 4th of September. We're a day later than usual, and that's on me. I apologize. At the time of this recording, and JD, I've got to ask two things this time. Number one, how do you feel as the week one leader in our score predictions? And number two, is it just me, or is Florida State just bad at football?
I want to save the gloating for later, but you know, it feels good to come real close to the final score. I take pride in being accurate in what I put out there, and you know, it just backs up the stats a little bit. And to cover Florida State, I was talking to friends, I was talking to family, and they were like, oh, like college football is on Monday night, Florida State, you know, Boston College. And I was like, they were like, this game's going to get ugly because Florida State's mad. And I said, you don't understand. Boston College is actually really good. Like, Bill O'Brien has that program trending in the right direction. And I go, I would not be surprised if Boston College wins that game. I didn't expect Boston College to dominate, but I think that does point to the fact that Florida State might be, I'm not ready to say it yet, but I think Florida State might be the worst program in that state, which says a lot because you're competing against Florida. Mike Norvell is literally just getting outcoached, and it's not even close.
Yeah, and it wasn't pretty on Monday night either, nor was, I know we talked about it a little bit last week, but the game against Georgia Tech really just wasn't pretty. So, I mean, this is a program everyone says is angry. You miss out on the playoff and then get run out of the building by Georgia in your bowl game. You talk all offseason about how we're going to make everybody regret their decision. We're going to make everybody realize how good we actually are. And then you drop your first two games to Boston College and Georgia Tech. Now, I will say, and I want to know your thoughts about this, I feel like Florida State got a little screwed because we all think of week one as like, okay, it's week one, get your flaws out and stuff like that. And even to an extent, week two. But Florida State, I feel, almost got a little screwed by having two conference games to open the season. They have no opportunity to work out these flaws. Now they're already way behind the ACC.
No, I don't give them the benefit of that doubt at all. It's not like you're Colorado playing in North Dakota State, right? Like a tough team you might undermine. You should have handled business against Georgia Tech. I don't care that their program is also trending in the right direction. If you are Florida State and you say what you said, you can't not take care of business against a team like Georgia Tech. I don't care that it's not like you went into Georgia Tech and lost. You were both playing at a neutral site game. Week zero, you've had all summer to prep for this week and Boston College. And then you just come out there and you look incompetent at times. Like, it's just not a good look. I'd love to give them the benefit of the doubt. And I, you know, but I think I'm ready to put a fork in the ACC as a whole this year. And as much as it pains me to say, I think SMU might actually be able to win that conference. Like, I mean, with how the rest of the conference is playing right now, minus Miami, but SMU has a pretty good chance.
I don't disagree with you. Florida State is really just, I'm not going to lie, I was a big Georgia Tech fan in week zero. I wanted to see Georgia Tech beat Florida State in that game. And then come Monday night, I was fully expecting, I knew Boston College was good, as you and I were talking about in pre-show. We knew Boston College was going to be good. But I definitely didn't expect what we got. And frankly, the defense looks spectacular for the Eagles. But I really don't know if it was the Eagles looking good or if it was the Seminoles offense just looking that bad. The O-line was just atrocious. Gave the quarterback no time. Couldn't get any rushing yards at all because they were getting stopped at the front four. It was just horrible. I mean, I'm kind of with you. Like, I'm sticking a fork in the ACC this year. There's just nothing they can bring to the table, in my opinion.
Miami's the only redeeming team, and we saw them play a really bad Florida team, so I want to hold judgment, really. But, ACC's pretty much done. I'm really relying on Miami to make sure that SMU doesn't win the conference, but it's a possibility at this point.
Well, that does it for the non-Big 12 talk. So this show is going to be pretty simple, JD. We're going to talk about the scores from week one, because obviously last week in our show with Nate Cross, we talked about what we expected from week one, and now we have the fallout of that. And then at the end of that, we're going to talk TCU-Stanford. We're going to save that for the end. And then after we talk about TCU-Stanford, we got a couple injuries we need to highlight that was brought up in the press conference that was also mentioned in our group chat as well. A couple players are going to miss quite a few weeks, and we're going to talk about the impact of that. And then after that, we're just going to preview week two with a lot of the Big 12 games. And there's a pretty interesting slate you and I agree on. We're not going to spend a lot of time previewing Long Island. I think most folks are expecting TCU to win by at least, I would say, 45 in this one. And I throw out 45 because in six-man football, that's the mercy rule. That's the only reason I'm throwing out 45. It might be way worse than that. So we won't spend a lot of time on Long Island. But there's a lot to talk about from this past Friday against Stanford, and then a lot to talk about in the conference coming up this week in week two. So first of all, let's just start with week one. And obviously we start with the one that everyone seemed to be talking about the most, and that was the one that was played Thursday night between Colorado and North Dakota State. Now, there were other Big 12 games on Thursday, but this was the one, and the one that we thought this could be an upset. And North Dakota State, as time was expiring, had a fairly decent Hail Mary chance. Sure, they probably would have liked to have been at least 10 yards closer for it to actually work, but they were throwing for the end zone as time ran out. And everything I took away from this game is that Colorado has not changed. They can score easy, but they give up just as easy, if not easier.
Yeah, I think it's more indicting on not how their defense is going to get beat, but what North Dakota State was able to do. I talked about, a lot of people talked about how North Dakota State's a very physical team. They're going to be able to run the ball, especially against a soft defensive front. And they really didn't. They were kind of throwing at will against a program that is supposed to have the greatest secondaries because they're coached by Deion Sanders. And it just wasn't the case. You saw a lot of broken assignments. You saw a lot of flat coverages. Like, you weren't, I don't know if, you know, Colorado was just getting out coached or what, but you know, it's not something that if you're a Colorado fan or someone who's backing Colorado to be good this year, you want to see out of the first game. Now, credit, like I said earlier, North Dakota State is a really good program, and any coach has the rightful ability to be pissed off at their AD for scheduling them as a week one game.
No, I agree. And I mean, it's a lot like, and we'll get into this game here in a bit, but it's a lot like South Dakota State. You know, I mean, that's just kind of the basic rule. Anyone with the name Dakota, do not schedule in non-conference. Just don't do it. Now, thankfully for Colorado, they came out with a win. But as you were talking, NDSU had three dominant runners. The biggest one was their quarterback, Cam Miller. When you let your quarterback, the quarterback run for 81 yards and a couple touchdowns, you know you're in trouble. On top of that, he threw for 277 yards and another touchdown. Then you have Shamar Brown, who ran for 33 yards. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce the other running back's name, but he ran for 32 on 9 carries. North Dakota State's offense just had a field day with Colorado. And thankfully for Colorado, their offense had just a field day. Sanders threw for 445 yards and four touchdowns. Colorado got off really, really lucky that North Dakota State's defense didn't perform as well as they otherwise probably could have.
Yeah. Don't want to really spend too much talking about them just because I still think they're a non-story, but Travis Hunter is the best non-quarterback in all of college football.
Yeah.
And that is the one thing you have to give them praise for. I mean, the dude played almost all 142 snaps that were of the game. And he looked like he was 100% the whole time. Maybe he got away with a little bit of push-offs here and there, but he's still, it's crazy whenever you think about what he did to TCU as a cornerback last year in the opener and then see what he's able to do to other teams as a receiver. It's unheard of. Like, he's a unicorn in the sport, and to be decent at one position is hard enough, but to be really good at two positions that are very demanding is insanely unheard of.
Without a doubt. And I mean, I saw before the high school game I had to cover on Thursday night, I was able to catch a little bit of the first quarter. And I mean, that touchdown pass where he just ran a simple out route that wasn't very deep at all, and just broke a tackle and just outran everybody on the North Dakota State defense. He is that guy. I mean, that's bottom line. He's that guy. My fear for Colorado going forward is that they just don't have the team around him. The other final scores from Thursday night, there were three other games in the Big 12. Kansas defeated Lindenwood 48-3. UCF defeated New Hampshire 57-3. And Utah shut out Southern Utah 49-0. No real shock there with any of those games. I don't even think last week we spent any time talking about those. So we're going to move on. Saturday, I was a little disappointed in the performance of West Virginia. However, we did talk about this last week, that Penn State really is that program. They just have always just been on the short draw of the Big Ten. Penn State winning that game 34-12. What'd you take away from that game?
Man, I don't know what I take away from it yet, because Penn State just wore them down. And West Virginia just didn't look good at all. They didn't want to come out and play at all. They were like, West Virginia is a team you hang your hat on that, hey, no matter who they play in the trenches, they're going to be good. And they just weren't. It was weird.
Yeah, we'll see how they bounce back this week. But that was, granted, a tough game against a top 10 opponent.
Also, Gary Green was very pedestrian.
Yes, he was. Threw for less than 200 yards. I think it was only 161, and he didn't even throw for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Garrett Green did not look as good as I think we would have expected. I will tell you who bumped up in my rankings a little bit, and that was Oklahoma State. Last weekend, I was saying, you know, keep your eyes on this game. South Dakota State's the back-to-back reigning FCS champion. Coming into Stillwater, I mean – coming into Stillwater means nothing after last season when South Alabama came in and beat them, what, 33-6 or something like that. So I put a lot of upset alert on this game, and the Cowboys came out and pretty much just handled business. 44-20, the Cowboys beat South Dakota State. I may be putting a little too much emphasis on that, but that's really only because of how much of an upset alert I put this on. Ollie Gordon, 126 yards, 3 touchdowns. Alan Bowman threw for 245 and a pair of touchdowns as well. The Cowboys just seem to be clicking. Now, the defense has something to work on, but the offense, I think the offense looked like they were almost in midseason form.
I am the opposite from this takeaway of this game.
Really?
I actually was like, Oklahoma State, either I need to see something from Arkansas or I might have to move them down slightly. And my main concern is really just like, the offense was so pedestrian. Like, Alan Bowman was, he was very accurate. He threw for nearly 250 yards. Ollie Gordon had 4.5 yards per carry. But take away the first half stats. Whenever depth is out of the question in the first half, Oklahoma State was always going to have better depth than South Dakota State. Put depth out of the question in the first half and look at the stats. It is a completely different ballgame. Ollie Gordon looks rusty. He doesn't look like he's being able to run the ball well. Alan Bowman looks like age is finally catching up to him when you're 75 years old. Like, the offense is pedestrian. I need to see something against Arkansas, and then I'll be back on the maybe Oklahoma State can make some noise train.
I think that's fair. I do think that's fair. I am owning up to the fact that I put this game on a high upset alert, and they beat them by 24 points. I'm answering for my own misgivings here. Cincinnati beat Towson 38-20. Iowa State beat North Dakota 21-3. Kansas State beat UT Martin. Go ahead.
Cincinnati might be a lot worse than we think they might be too.
I agree. When I saw that score,
I watched the highlights of that game, and the defense is very suspect for this team.
Yeah, I had not seen the highlights of it, granted, but I saw that score and I looked at some of the stats, and just it does not read well to me. I agree with you. Cincinnati might be a lot worse. We gave them credit for. Kansas State beat Tennessee Martin 41-6. I would like to make a comment on this one real quick, just because for personal reasons mainly, I gave Baylor a lot of crap going into the game with Tarleton, and I think I even said I don't put it past the Texans to go into Waco and pull off the upset, but the Bears took care of business 45-3 over Tarleton. Again, ultimately, that really doesn't mean much. That just means Baylor is a little bit better than what I was giving them some credit for. But ultimately, that doesn't mean much. But I have to admit that I was wrong on that one. The one that I laughed at the most, UNLV 27, Houston 7. Look, we knew they were going to be bad. But this is just, this is ridiculous. I mean, you have all this hype coming into the conference. And then in your second year, you open with a 27-7 loss to UNLV. They're not looking good. They part ways with Dana Holgorsen after 1 year in the Big 12. I mean, man, if you're going to hype yourself up for almost 10 years to get yourself into this conference, and then you finally get that break, you got to take advantage of it. And this is just bad. And okay, it's not going to get any better. They're playing Oklahoma this week.
Nolan, 5 years from now, whose program is in a better condition, Cincinnati or Houston?
Oh, good question. Only because of the Texas pipeline recruiting, I'm going to say Houston.
It's Houston, and it's because it's Willie Fritz. I don't care that they lost that to UNLV.
Yeah,
they are going to get better throughout the season. What I am heard is Donovan Smith not performing like I thought he could. But, yeah, I'm not really worried about Houston. You're rebuilding. You got a lot to worry, you know, worry about. Willie Fritz will get you there, so.
I agree, and I love Willie Fritz. And that I mean, I've said that since we started this podcast. I loved him at Tulane. I like him now. And, again, I will bring up, just because I'm the high school guy, the recruiting pipeline for Houston. I think that there's a lot of talent that the Cougars can get, and I think Fritz could be a good recruiter. But, yeah, as for right now, just with all the hype that was given, and Houston has not really even made any kind of ripple in this conference, I think it's somewhat of a joke. And then the game I'm looking forward to the most, actually, hang on, let me get this one out of the way. BYU beat Southern Illinois 41-13. Arizona over New Mexico 61-39. Now, the game, go ahead.
Territory McMillan, 5 touchdowns all the day for Arizona. Yep. He is a top 3 receiver in all of college football.
Yeah, he looked
and
good.
And Arizona has a very, very bad defense. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care about New Mexico having a different scheme. Arizona cannot compete in this conference without a defense. I don't care about the memes and the laughs that the Big 12 has a bunch of offensive shootouts. No, it's because of very good offenses, not because the defenses are bad. There's a difference.
Right.
Anyways, continue.
I completely agree. And he looked fantastic. And I completely agree with you, especially after watching that New Mexico opener from week 0. That was horrible. You give up almost 40 points to the Lobos. Arizona's got to figure out something defensively. And then Arizona State beating Wyoming 48-7. Again, we think Arizona State's going to be pretty bad. It is Wyoming. This is a different Wyoming team that beat Texas Tech a year ago and played Texas very well down in Austin. Completely different team from last year. Now the game I want to talk about real quick before we dive into TCU. Texas Tech and Abilene Christian went into overtime in Lubbock. And, I mean, Tech was lucky to get away with this. Now, if I was ACU, I would not have gone for 2 in that situation. I would have played for double overtime. I would have played the odds there. Because at that point, you get the ball back to start double overtime. You score again. You go for 2. You know, then Tech has to do the same thing, right? I would have kicked the extra point if I were ACU. And then possibly we're talking about the Wildcats driving back to Abilene with a win.
No, I love the going for 2 decision there, simply because Abilene Christian needed to be kind of like a miracle pass to even get to the red zone in overtime. They were kind of slowing down a little bit. You could see it's same thing that we talked about with Oklahoma State, is these teams like Texas Tech have a little bit more depth that they could tap into and go into reserves. Abilene Christian does not. These guys are running on fumes, right? As a coach, you kind of got to know when your guys are about to tap out and you got to go for it. Now, I do want to say that was probably the worst 2-point conversion attempt I've ever seen in my entire life.
Without a doubt.
If you're going to go for 2, you got to – I don't care what happens. If you run up to the line, you either got to snap it quick, or if they call timeout like Joey McGuire did, you have to change your play. You cannot come back out in the same formation and hope that it will succeed, especially if you're running a 5-man, a 5-wide on your 2-point conversion play. You got to do something different.
See, this is where I'm going to disagree with you, because I think that when Joey McGuire called that timeout, that's when I decided to go ahead and kick it. Because Joey McGuire is now getting his guys ready for anything. He's trying to figure out, think about what he's seen on film, think about what you're going to run, think about your playbook. That's when you play it safe and kick it. Give your guys a break for a minute. Because at this point, Abilene Christian has nothing to lose. The game, obviously, but they've already proven their point. They've gone into Lubbock. They've taken the Red Raiders to overtime, and they're literally, if they wanted to run the play for two and hopefully with a better play call, they were on the verge of beating them. Abilene Christian had proved everything they needed to, and of course they want to come away with the win. It's when McGuire called that timeout, I go ahead and kick it. You know, get in their heads a little bit. It's a mental game at that point. Then you come back out on offense, save that two-point conversion play or another one for when you hopefully and possibly even score in double overtime. We'll agree to disagree on that one, but I think
it becomes a chess match because then now exactly. You go out, you still have a timeout that you can call, and you're going to see what formation they're in. Now Joey McGuire has to decide, does he roll out the same defense he was just in? And you try to scheme around it, or does he try to scheme you? And then it becomes a coaching battle. And, I mean, I don't know. Run a better two-point conversion next time, Abilene Christian. And then we're not talking about this.
That's the one thing you and I will agree on. That play call was horrible. Abilene Christian could have called a much better play call there. All right. JD, let's go ahead and get to the game that everyone's been waiting for us to talk about from week one. TCU wins 34-27 in Palo Alto over Stanford. But it was not pretty. And I admittedly did not see a lot of this game just because I was at a high school game on Friday night. Again, I hate college football on Friday nights, man. I let the high schools play on Friday. I want to see you on Saturday. But I did get to watch the second half, and it just seemed to me that nothing was really wrong. It seemed like there was some miscommunication. The team just wasn't really gelling properly. I don't think anything was wrong with personnel. Just we looked sluggish and rusty.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this kind of goes back to what you talked about with Florida State, is that teams kind of get a week one grace period, right? To kind of come out sluggish, look a little bit rusty, maybe a little bit slightly undisciplined. And that's exactly kind of what happened. TCU had uncharacteristic fumbles that were happening. There was a really weird turnover game, like JP getting one ripped out of his hands. Tymon Mitchell, a 320-pound defensive tackle with the only interception of the entire game. Like, it was just a weird turnover game. TCU commits three penalties on the opening drive, all on third down that could have got them off the field that were just uncharacteristic. TCU had a fourth down penalty that was also called that was honestly an horrible call, but the precedent had already been set from the first drive. That's what led to the call. I mean, TCU didn't look pretty, but a win's a win. You're going to take it 100% of the time, especially on the road to open up the season on a late Friday night with the game not ending at 1:30 a.m., you know, local time. Like, come on, what are we doing, man? Like, I know I'm young, but I'm not that young. It was hard.
Yeah, no, of course. But much to your point, this is a good confidence booster, especially with, you know, the recent realignment and the fact that Stanford's now ACC. I mean, I think of this still as if the Pac-12 were a thing, right? Like, this was a Power 5 non-conference matchup. And you went into Palo Alto, which is not an easy place to win a game. And I don't think we ever trailed.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
We did not take
that. Must have been first half.
Yes.
Okay. Because I missed almost the entire first half, sadly. My high school game was in a weather delay for 45 minutes before we even kicked off.
Yes. TCU did not have their first lead until 2 minutes and 22 seconds to go in the second quarter.
Okay. Okay. So when I finally caught up, TCU had already had the lead. Yeah, I mean, and sluggish starts to be expected. And again, I give that the week one thing. But even then, Hoover throws for 353 yards, two touchdowns, completed 28-42. That's not horrible. It's not ideal. I mean, that's a pretty good completion percentage. But still, that could have been better. Cam Cook ran for 81 yards. Trey Sanders got a couple carries for 11. Jack Besh, 139 yards receiving. JP had 107 yards receiving. Savion Williams, 11 receptions, but only 85 yards. Williams and Besh got the two touchdowns on the receiving end. I mean, it seemed like late they started clicking. But the defense is what gave me a little bit of fears for what I did see. Just again, with what you said, not being able to get off the field, a lot of mental mistakes, penalties. I did read about the turnovers. I didn't get to see all of them, but this just all seems like week one errors that are, especially going into this week about against Long Island, easily fixable.
Yeah, I think if you're a TCU fan, right, the biggest takeaway you need to take from this game, and I wrote about it in my Sunday What Did We Learn article, is last year TCU was 0-4 in one possession games. The year before that, when they went to the national championship, they were 4-1 in one score games. To bounce back, that's kind of duality of college football, right? You're not going to get every 50-50 game. But to start this season 1-0 is already an improvement of where this team was last year. Last year, they couldn't close out games. They couldn't make a comeback in games. This year, they made the comeback, and they closed out the game. That's already a massive improvement compared to what we saw the last season. So I don't care about the rust. I don't care about the challenges they faced in the first quarter. This is a win, and I'm going to be happy about it because now you get a little what should be a layup win. Obviously, it's college football. Anything can happen. We just talked about Tech and Abilene Christian. But, I mean, that's great confidence you need to carry over week to week, because remember, you start conference play next week. You are 1 week away from conference.
Yeah, and we'll dive into that more next week after this one rolls along and we end up facing the UCF Knights at home. Before we go into injury talk, JD, I mean, my last question for you, I mean, I think I've pretty much gotten everything I can off my chest about this game. What is your biggest takeaway about this team?
The offensive line is way better than we thought they were going to be. Well, okay, I want to pick my words carefully because I don't want to say way better than we thought they would be, because we didn't know how they were going to be, and that's the problem. Mm-hmm. This offensive line was a lot better. They only allowed one sack, and it was kind of a coverage sack. It wasn't really a offensive line missing assignment sack. Cam Cook was averaging 4.1 yards a carry. Hoover averaged 17.2 yards per completion. TCU had 385-yard receivers for the first time in history. The offense is clicking, and the offensive line looked really good. When you can leave a game, this is how you know an offensive line is good, is whenever you can leave a game and you don't know a single name of your offensive lineman. I was asking multiple TCU fans, hey, do you know who that is, that guard? They said no. That's how you know you're doing good. No one's going to know your name on the offensive line. If they know your name, you're either a first-round draft pick or you're not very good. And there's kind of no in-between, right? So the fact that no one knew who it was or was even asking, who is that guy, is a good sign of where this offensive line is at. Coach Ricker does a fantastic job with offensive lines at TCU. I had no doubt in him. My doubt was in whether this group would be able to gel together. And this gives me so much like enthusiasm, and I just can't wait to watch this group as a whole be able to grow the rest of the season, because this is their first game that they've all played together. This is the first game for 4 out of the 5 that they're playing in a TCU uniform. Like, this is a group that if they continue to perform better and better each week, this team could actually be something special and be potentially competing in Arlington.
Yeah, I agree. The O-line did look good for the portion I got to see. And I mean, obviously that speaks to something for the offensive stats and just the yardage that was gained. I don't have it right in front of me right now, but I don't know how many times Hoover was sacked. Do you have that in front of you?
It was once.
Just once. Okay, so there you go. I mean, that alone speaks for itself, especially when you're playing a team like Stanford and just another power program. Before we move on to week two and previewing what's coming up.
Wait, I do want to talk Stanford a little bit longer. Just give me like 15 minutes. Yeah, I got a question for you. You
brought it up. 15 minutes? All right.
You brought it up. I kind of want to talk about it. What concerns you about the defense?
Again, you're asking me, and I'm kind of on my heels a little bit just because I only got to watch a small portion of the game. But for me, I really don't like when we play loose coverage. And I really don't, I mean, but that's not a TCU thing. I don't like when anyone plays loose coverage. I am definitely a fan of the tight coverage and not letting those underneath routes beat you. As an OU fan, I see the Sooners do it all the damn time. And so I think that was a lot of what TCU was giving up on third downs and even second and short. just to keep them on the field and keep those drives going for Stanford. I didn't like that very much. And then just the unclean game. I mean, I did see the penalty numbers as well, and some of them I wasn't happy with, but others was, you know, it is what it is. Ultimately, that's all I can say. I will know a lot more after I watch this game, and probably even after I watch UCF. Again, I sample size of what I saw. I only saw a good portion of the second half, and that was about it. I did not see any of the first half just because of my other job, and that's, again, why I hate Friday night games, just because I can't watch it. But that was probably my biggest takeaway. I hate that loose coverage and just the way the secondary backs off and allows those short yardage plays to just eat you alive and keep those drives going.
Yeah, I think it's fair, but I kind of want to talk about how the defense is like. You take away the first drive and the mistakes that happen, the mental mistakes and the penalties, right? You take away a touchdown. Three different times you would have kept them out of field goal range. The defense finished with 10 tackles for a loss and 4 sacks. When's the last time you've looked at a TCU defense and been like, wow, double digits? I can't remember. Maybe 3 years ago, whenever they
and
had
still only won
on
by
the
7
line. Yeah.
Yep.
Like you have that. Their only other, their next touchdown was after TCU fumbled the ball on that JPR interception that gave Stanford the ball on their TCU 20. After that was the second half, and Eric Amanor became Eric Amanor and became a man of just jumping up, catching
I saw
everything.
That one. Yep.
Like,
I saw that one.
That was going to happen. It doesn't matter who your defense is. He's going to get his. That's what happened. And the fact that you kind of kept him quiet till the second half, I am more than okay with how this defense performed. You take away a lot of these mistakes, and TCU ends up winning by maybe 18 points.
I don't disagree. And again, I'm the big believer. I did another podcast today about the local high schools in the greater Fort Worth area. And everyone was asking me, are you hitting the panic button? And I had to keep telling everyone, guys, it's week one. You know, I mean, I can say I didn't necessarily like it, or it gave me like a little bit of bad feeling, but I'm definitely not hitting the panic button. I mean, it's week one. You know, and they were playing a solid team. It's not like they were going against Southern Illinois like BYU was, right, where we were supposed to beat them 70-0. You know, this is a solid Stanford program. And so I'm completely with you on this. I mean, you're going to make mistakes, especially when you play a good team. And the good teams are going to make you make mistakes. I learned that from my days of hockey. You know, like a good team is going to make you have a penalty because they're going to draw the penalty from you, right? So I'm completely with you, right? I'm not hitting the panic alert on the defense. I didn't mean that that I hate the defense or that I think the defense is going to be the downfall. I will say the one thing that did scare me from what I saw in this game, the defense did give me a little bit of a knot in my stomach. I'll say that.
I'm perfectly okay with the defense. The only thing I'm really worried about is the same thing that I was worried about last year. Same thing I talked about all offseason. And same thing that's going to continue to probably make my hair gray by the end of the season is the red zone offense. Run the ball.
Yeah, that was another one. That was another one. Actually, so that's something I wanted to bring up in injury talk, and unless you have another topic to bring up from this game. So obviously, one of the injuries I wanted to talk about, and it's not even the biggest one. There's a bigger one we can talk about. Haas Haney. Haas Haney came in for 2 snaps, and I was very happy to hear that. But they didn't have him throwing the ball. He did not throw a pass. He came in, he handed the ball off once, and then he kept it himself. And it almost looked like it was a package. Like, they want Haas Haney in there. And so I think that was kind of probably what their red zone offense was going to be. And I completely agree, run the ball. But I mean, let me ask you, do you trust either Hoover or Seals to run in the red zone?
I trust Hoover to run in the red zone. And I think his legs kind of proved that also on Saturday. He had a rushing touchdown that was set up by a 20-plus yard rush by him. I do trust him. I'm not comfortable with him running just because I don't want him to get injured. But I do agree that Haas had packages that were made for him.
That's my point. You see Josh Hoover in there, and you're going to think pass, or if he runs, you're going to be able to close in on it. You think Haas Haney, you're thinking anybody can touch the ball right now, and you don't know who it's going to be.
Yeah.
And so obviously that's a big deal. And they wanted to give him those snaps. And unfortunately, it was confirmed after just his second play. He got two snaps. The first one he handed off, the second one he ran. High ankle sprain. He's out for 3 to 4 weeks, unfortunately. So it will be a significant amount of time before we are able to actually see that package in a game. But yeah, I completely agree with you about the red zone offense. And that was another struggle that I did kind of notice in the latter part of the game that I watched. And that's something that's going to need to be fixed. And unfortunately, the other injury we have to talk about probably isn't going to help that, as Major Everhart is also going to miss 3 to 4 weeks with an injury. His, I believe, if I remember correctly, came on a kick return on a special teams play. And he's going to be out for a while. And that takes away a speedy weapon on the outside for your red zone offense that'll help spread that defense out. That's going to be a massive, massive piece of this offense missing both Hoss Haney and Major Everhart.
Yeah. I mean, I'm about to say what I'm going to say, and it's not any ill will towards Major Everhart, because I love him as a player, and I think what he provides great value to TCU. Only part you're going to be missing from him in the TCU red zone is whenever Kendall Briles draws up a first down screenplay that goes for 1 yard and then does a second down fade route that to Major Everhart and then decides to run the ball on third down for no unknown reason. But yeah, Major Everhart, I think the biggest part is he's such a threat deep in the end zone trying to bring out kicks that TCU has speed. That's something that the program will always have. But Major Everhart is probably the best guy for it. That does kind of concern me a little bit, because he was able to provide really good starting field position for the Horned Frogs. That I think that he's the type of player that you don't really realize who he is and what he's doing until he's gone.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, and that's why I think that he's going to be, like he could be, if Briles would call the play, such a big red zone threat. I mean, I would love to see a jet sweep or him motion into a backfield and take a reverse or a counter play from the backfield. You know, I'm not about to badmouth Kendall Briles on the show, but
I'll do that later in the season.
I would get so more creative if I were him. With the red zone offense, he's basically running the same offense. He is, aside from the package we saw with Hoss Haney for just two plays, the offense didn't really look like they were changing anything, whether it was red zone, backed up against their own goal line, or at midfield. I didn't really see any difference, and that's the key thing. And I think that you could do so much with Everhart in the offense. Again, I'm not about to badmouth Kendall Briles yet. But I would get way more creative with that. And I think that would be a big thing that we could do just to help make our red zone offense a lot better. I mean, you have so many weapons and you're not utilizing them.
Yeah.
That's a big problem for me.
It's not even really like your weapons are already out there on the field too. Like, you got Savion. You saw what happened on the first red zone drive. You threw a fade route and he caught it. Why are you throwing your fade route on 3rd and 8 when they're running end zone coverages? Like, I don't know. I don't want to dwell on it too much. It was 1 week. We'll see what happens the rest of the season.
Well, that's a good segue to talk about week 2. So let's go ahead and do that. So around the conference, and this is one that I'm intrigued by, we start off on Friday night in Dallas, BYU coming to town to take on the Ponies. Out east. And, you know, I don't know what to think, man. I really don't. BYU played a nobody and beat up on them. SMU struggled with Nevada. Got a win on, you know, this past weekend. But I think this game is going to tell us a lot about both of these teams.
Yeah, pretty much how I wrote it was, if SMU plays like they did against Nevada, even though BYU's in a rebuilding phase, they can still come out and get beat. BYU is a very physical team, and SMU gets punched in the mouth a little bit too much, they might give up and quit. So, yeah, it's a big, what kind of team are you weekend?
What's shocking to me, SMU opens as an 11.5-point favorite against the Cougars. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. BYU has no quarterback still, so I'm excited to see what happens with them. SMU is also on bye next week. So, you know, you're kind of going all for it this week.
Yeah, without a doubt, especially playing that week zero game they kind of needed after the three opening games before they open ACC play.
They need 2 weeks before they play TCU. That's why they always take the bye before it.
Saturday to open the game at to open the week at 11 o'clock in the morning, Kansas State going to New Orleans to play Tulane. And I have talked about it before, even though Willie Fritz is not there anymore, I am high on the Tulane Green Wave. I really, really like this program and what they've been building in recent years. I think I'll even go as far to say I think they deserve the Power 5 slot more than SMU did. But, hey, whatever. What do you think about this game?
One, if you've never been to Tulane Stadium, you should go. It's a very beautiful stadium. New Orleans as a whole isn't the greatest, but it's a very pretty stadium and they care about their football. Two is I think Kansas State just out athletes them this game. Tulane's a very good ball club, but Kansas State's got a lot of talent and they're just not very good on the interior D line or O line, which is not very Kansas State like, but I think they're just too athletic for Tulane.
Kansas State, a 9-point favorite going into that one. UCF against Sam Houston. Sam Houston got a good win over Rice, but I'm not putting a lot of stock into them pulling off the upset against the Knights. How about
you? Hey, Rice is Alabama before Alabama was Alabama, okay? Let's Rice owns the all-time record over Alabama. Let's put some respect on their name.
Hey, Rice is the reason that Texas still lays claim to the tallest peak in Colorado. Winning that bowl game against the Buffaloes way back when. The Cougars of Houston, after an embarrassing loss to UNLV, are going to Norman. And, JD, how you feeling?
Oklahoma looked like they learned that there's two sides to the ball this season already. So, I mean, Oklahoma realized that they have to stop their opponents as well. Could be an interesting time this year.
Yeah, it may be, but do you put any stock? I mean, it seems to me like Oklahoma is going to have to play the most imperfect game ever.
I don't care. I don't care what the spread is. Give me Oklahoma to cover it.
Well, there you go. And you asked. So hang on. Phone locked. It is 29. Yeah, give me Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah. Give me Oklahoma. What? Vegas knows best. What are we doing here?
TCU plays Long Island. We'll talk about that in a minute. We won't spend too much time on it. And the one that you wanted to talk about, Oklahoma State and Arkansas. So obviously the win over South Dakota State, while I put that on upset alert and I was at least happy to see it not turn into that, at least in the end, you still remain unconvinced. The Cowboys are a 7.5-point favorite at home against the Razorbacks. What are your thoughts?
Arkansas is a very, very good offense. They don't have a good defense. This is going to be a classic shootout. And we talked about earlier about Oklahoma State's defense and maybe not being at the best of its game. They kind of lack a major pass rush. So I kind of like Arkansas here. But I mean, it's Gundy. Weird things have happened. So he could shut out Arkansas and win by 50 points. Who knows? Or they could be blown out by 30. Again, it's Gundy and Oklahoma State. You don't know what's going to happen. And that's what makes them so fun.
Cincinnati plays Pitt. Cincinnati beat Towson. Pitt beat Kent State. Cincinnati is a 1.5-point favorite. I've got a feeling I'm leaning towards picking Pitt in this one.
I already have picked Pitt.
Cincinnati might be a lot worse than we expect. Baylor, Utah, which while technically a Big 12 game, is a non-conference game this week. Utah is a 15-point favorite in Salt Lake City. That's a 2:30 kick on Fox. Both these teams played nobodies, beat up on them. And again, I know I said it earlier, I was mainly just talking smack last week when I was saying Tarleton could go into Waco and beat Baylor, but that didn't happen. This is one to me that we're really going to learn about both of them, but I really still just feel like Utah is going to
just run the table. Give me Utah to cover, but give me the over on the game too, because I really think Baylor might have something cooking with Daquan Finn at quarterback. And that there's still a lot that isn't shown on what their offense is capable of, that I think they're going to be able to scrape by and get a little, two touchdowns, three touchdowns, maybe even. But Cam Rising's that dude. So, they're going to win.
Over-under set at 54.5 for that one. So, I think that's a decent pick.
Yeah.
Then we got the battle for the Cy-Hawk Trophy. Iowa and Iowa State. It is in Iowa City at the home of the famous hospital wave.
The Kinnick there, wave.
The Kinnick wave. Iowa, 2.5-point favorite over Iowa State. Both teams 1-0.
Give me Iowa to cover, and give me Iowa to win by 3 touchdowns, because Iowa might actually have an offense, and that kind of scares me. They had 487 offensive yards last week. I know they played a nobody, but for Iowa, that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a big deal. For low-scoring Iowa, that's a big deal.
Yeah, so I think Iowa's might surprise a lot of people this week. I know it's El Clasico. It's a kind of a, you know, who knows what happens in that matchup, but I think, yeah, I mean, yeah, give me Iowa by a good bit.
West Virginia, we're not going to talk about this one pretty much at all. West Virginia gets a bounce-back game after the Penn State loss. They play Albany, the Great Danes. I believe the only Great Danes in college football, by the way. Kansas, what could be a close game with Illinois. Kansas still ranked, 5.5-point favorite on the road against the Fighting Illini.
Yeah. I mean, going to Champaign and playing is tough, man. A lot of people talk about that it's just a tough team to play. Do I think that means Kansas is going to lose? No. Do I want Kansas to lose? Yes, because I'm already tired of the Kansas hype. It's kind of already insufferable to me. But, yeah, I think Kansas kind of takes care of business. As long as Jaden Daniels is healthy, this team could actually be good.
I completely agree, and I expect the same. I think Kansas comes out of Champaign with a win. Colorado goes on the road to Lincoln to face the Cornhuskers, and Nebraska's a 7.5-point favorite, and I just cannot talk myself into Colorado winning this one.
Give me Nebraska. Give me the points to cover. I'll even increase the line to 9.5 points. Dylan Raiola is the real deal. I mean, I don't care what anyone says. He's actually really good. I do think the whole Patrick Mahomes bit is really funny, because he really does look like him and plays like him. But you're playing a team that actually is going to be able to compete with the athletic talent, and if not, maybe have better overall athletic talent than what you have, minus Shador and Travis Hunter, that I think, you know, they get away with beating these lesser teams. TCU was one of them last year, where you're just outbeating the talent they had. You can't do that here. And Matt Rhule is a fantastic top 25 coach in all of college football.
Without a doubt.
I fully believe that he's going to have Nebraska ready to win this weekend.
I completely agree with you on that. I'm actually, even as an OU fan, I'm enjoying seeing the resurgence of the Huskers.
Football's better when Nebraska and Miami are good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, just go back to the 90s, man. Arizona faces Northern Arizona. We might just find out exactly how bad Arizona's defense is. We won't spend a lot of time on that
we'll
one.
We'll find out definitely next week, because we got one of the weird non-conference matchups again with Kansas State. So
that's true.
And
yeah,
which,
that's true.
Shout out to Kansas State. You go at Tulane, and then you get Arizona. Like, hey, you got a tough non-com.
By the way, quick comment. I don't know how I feel about this, but I kind of do enjoy that Pac-12 after dark has become Big 12 after dark.
I don't like
that
it.
That game kicks off at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Arizona, Northern Arizona.
I don't know how I feel about it yet, because I feel like you need to come up with your own slogan that's not Big 12 after dark.
Like, yeah, we need something.
Big 12 after dark just makes me sad and wish for the Pac-12 and college football how it was. Not like, oh yeah, there's football. Like, obviously, I'm going to watch, but, like, I need something good, creative. I haven't thought of anything yet.
I mean, shoot, what do we have on Saturday? We have Saturday Night Live and Showtime at the Apollo. You call it Showtime in the Big 12 or something like that? That might work. I don't know.
Yeah.
What are those late night entertainment shows?
I was thinking like a high noon kind of play, like a high noon play, like, because you got Big Noon. You're thinking of High Noon because it's the South.
Okay, so call it High Moon.
Yeah, I like High. Might be onto something here. We'll workshop.
At exactly the same time, actually, Texas Tech goes from the Wildcats to the Cougars as they go up to face Wazoo in the middle of nowhere, Washington State. And Wazoo is a 2.5-point favorite in this one. And you know what? Again, after Tech showing against ACU, I just don't know, man. And you're already dancing.
It's the injuries, man. Obviously, you never want anyone to be injured, just because it takes away the fun. But for those of you who haven't seen the injury report for this year for Texas Tech after Abilene Christian, almost half the defense is either out or questionable. Taj Brooks himself is even questionable to play. They're missing a lot of key pieces, or could potentially be missing a lot of key pieces for this weekend's matchup. And playing at Washington State is already a tough game. Everyone likes to say whenever you lose a close, or whenever you have a close game like that, it just fires you up. Florida State, thank you. And I'll end my argument there.
I like that argument. And the final game of the conference kicks off 30 minutes after the two we just talked about. Arizona State and Mississippi State. And JD, we're talking a pre-show. This one is a pillow fight. The Sun Devils open as a 6-point favorite over under at 59.5.
Yeah. Whichever team wins this game, that might be their last chance at winning a game this season. Just before the schedule kind of turns up. I mean, Mississippi State's bad, man. And Arizona State, while they looked good against Wyoming, like you said, it's a new look Wyoming. Like, it's not much to write home about. Could be an interesting, like, 56-58 really close shootout, because both teams don't know the concept of a defense bad, but like, fun game to watch whenever it's 1 a.m. and you're still trying to watch something after the drinks have been flowing.
I know that feeling. Now we get to the one that everyone's been waiting for, and really, I don't think you or I have too much to talk about with this one. You did mention that Long Island does have a sneaky good run game, and I agree with you looking at their stats right here on my phone just off to the side of my laptop here. However, they are coming off a 27-21 loss to Albany. Not sure how fired up they're going to be coming into Fort Worth to play the Horned Frogs, especially a year after they went to Waco and lost to Baylor.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a school that merged together 2 years ago, barely even has a functioning football program. TCU will take care of business this week. They have to take care of business because you don't lose these games. It's different whenever you're Texas Tech and you play a school like Abilene Christian, because there's a lot of guys that have some animosity that they maybe weren't recruited by Texas Tech, right? Like, a lot of these guys are from the same area. Like, a lot of those are playing with a lot of hate in their heart. This is a team from New York. TCU hasn't played a New York team since they played Army a few years back. Like, this team has nothing to do with Texas. They're going to come in and be like, what do you mean it's 95 degrees still? Like, you got to take care of business this week. It's the home opener. Like, and I fully have no doubt that they won't take care of business. Like, this is an LIU team that had 5 more minutes of time of possession than their opponent and still lost, even though they outgained them. They ran more, they had more passing attempts. They had more rushing attempts. Like, this is an LIU team that's just bad and should get bullied. I'm sorry.
That's a strong statement by saying they should get bullied. That's a strong statement. It is interesting you brought up the weather though. Every home game, I'm going to try to do this in our preview podcast. The weather outlook on that day is going to look to be 87 degrees, sunny skies all day, winds up to about 14 miles per hour coming in from the northeast. And of course, this is a 7 o'clock kickoff. So, I mean, it should drop to about 82, 81 by kickoff. And then the low that night is going to be 62. So it might be a pretty comfortable night at Amon G. Carter Stadium. And that's why I said it was interesting you brought that up, because normally Texas weather would be the advantage in a game like this. Not so much. Now, the humidity could still be a big thing, because humidity is going to be 45%.
Yes. So that's going to be way more important than heat.
And the humidity is going to go up as the night goes on. So that's going to be the key thing.
Especially with the rain this week.
Yeah, especially with the rain this week. I know you've enjoyed it. I have not. I have been battling internet problems for the past 48 hours with that. That's the disadvantage of living in a trailer. Before we sign off, JD, we've had a good show so far. I really like all the recaps and the previews of the Big 12 and everything. Outside of the Big 12, what is the game that you are going to be watching the most?
See, I mean, obviously, you can take the obvious choice of, hey, you know what? It is the Texas-Michigan game. But, like, why are you as a fan caring about a game that might end really low scoring? I'm going to tell you the game that you should be watching. Actually, no, I know which game you should be watching. It's Tennessee-North Carolina State. That game, no one likes watching a defense battle, even though they're such an amazing sight to see. I love watching a defensive battle, and I truly believe Texas and Michigan will be a defensive battle. Tennessee North Carolina State is kind of the game to watch. Tennessee's quarterback, Nico, not even going to try to ever pronounce his last name, might be the best quarterback in all of college football, and I'm not joking when I say that. He's really, really good. North Carolina State heavily struggled in week one, like to the point where a lot of people on X/Twitter were calling for them to lose. And I think this will be a really good, hey, who are you kind of game. Are you going to make some noise this year? If you're NC State, you need a win this week because the ACC is kind of up for grabs right now. If it's ever a time to make some noise, it's now. And if you're Tennessee, it's the first year under no Nick Saban at Alabama. Mississippi State struggling, LSU struggling. Like, it's for the taking now. Like, you got to do something now.
Would there be anything worse for the ACC than for SMU to win the conference this year?
Would there be anything worse for me than for SMU to win the conference this year? Have you thought about that, Nolan? Have you seen my Twitter interactions with just means less ACC? I just got my letter in them. I got a sticker from them, right? They sent me a sticker because, you know, we're all friends. So I love Micah. I've already leaked last week, but Micah will be on in 2 weeks for that pod. Like, I love that group and what they do. They talk about ACC. They asked me, they said, hey, we want to send you a sticker, but what's your favorite ACC memory? We just need to know. And I said, my favorite memory was when they added SMU and decided to not pay him. If SMU wins the conference this year, I might have to make like the Florida State fan and delete my Twitter. Like, yeah.
We won't talk about what he promised either. I saw that. That's, oh man, I was thinking about him all day yesterday. With mine, I'm going to go off the board. You ready for this? 3 o'clock Saturday down in San Marcos on ESPNU, the Texas State Bobcats are hosting the UTSA Roadrunners. It is the renewal of a rivalry that really never fully became a rivalry because they both became FBS back in what, 2013, 2014. I think they're about 10 years in. Yep. To FBS. They played one season in the WAC, and in the WAC just got rid of football. Texas State went to the Sun Belt. UTSA went to Conference USA. I think the two have met maybe one time more. But this is the game. Like, I mean, these two are the closest to each other right there. San Marcos to San Antonio. We're talking about, I can hit a golf ball from the campus of Texas State to UTSA. Part of me wishes it was going to be the Alamo Dome, because I would love to see a sold-out Alamo Dome. I don't think it's going to happen anyway if it was. But, I've got to give a shout-out to my sister Chloe, who's a Texas State student right now. She was asking me how the team's going to do. And I said, look, these are two programs that I think are really on the rise and are going to be really, really good for quite a few years to come, especially in the G5 conferences. And so I think this game is really, really intriguing. 3 o'clock on ESPNU, especially with those of us in Texas. This is an under the radar one that I really, really like.
Yes, I love this. I love the game, and I'm glad you highlight it because it deserves recognition, because it will be a fantastic game. These are really two really good programs that I think are not only group of five teams on the rise that potentially could be a super conference ad. Like, these are in very big hot spots. UTSA just got the medical foundation from Texas. Texas State's been on the upswing ever for the last 15 years. They're steadily rising. These are two really good programs. The only issue I have with this is, why is it not the Buc-ee's Bowl? They're both perfectly spaced between a Buc-ee's. Like, why is this not the Buc-ee's Bowl? If I'm Buc-ee's, I'm kicking myself that I missed out on the chance to sponsor this trophy.
You know what? That's a good point, actually. But, I mean, what are they going to do? Just play in the parking lot? Like, I mean, the parking lot's big enough, let's be honest.
The stadium, the building big enough. Like,
the building, yeah. Like, Buc-ee's could put a stadium on the back of that property.
The trophy should be the Buc-ee's Beaver with Beaver Nuggets overflowing out of it. Like, there was so
holding
much
a
they
football
could have done. Yeah. There was so much they could have done, and they just missed their mark. But I do think the battle for I-35 kind of does also make me mad, because that's also the TCU-Baylor thing. Like, that's a lot of schools in Texas, because 35 goes so far.
Yeah, but 35 – yeah, but I-35 is the most busy highway in the United States of America. It literally runs from Laredo at the Rio Grande all the way to Duluth, Minnesota. So, I mean, there are a lot of things you could call the battle of I-35.
I mean, shoot, the real battle for I-35 is traffic versus drivable roads.
That is true. But, I mean, if we're going to talk about that, in theory, that's what you could call OU Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many things you can call the battle of I-35. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I don't mind it, but yeah, they should probably come up with something clever. But that is my under the radar. Bowl is
right there. Exactly. Anyways, I digress.
That's my under the radar game of the week.
I'm going to send some emails.
Frog fans, that is going to do it for the 9th episode of the Gridiron Frogs podcast as a part of the TCU Horned Frogs on SI page. Thank you for tuning in, listening, watching, or however you find your podcast. We'll see you next week with another great show. And until then, for my partner JD Andres and everyone at killerfrogs.com, I'm Nolan Ruth signing off. So long, everybody.
Thanks, guys.